This is the second day of this July 2008 7-day session, and we'll resume with our text from yesterday, the collected works of Chinul, who's a 12th century Korean Zen master. This book is translated by Robert Buswell, Jr. Chinul when Chinul died, Dogen was 10 years old, just to give a sense of their respective ages. This chapter I'll be reading from now is called Secrets on Cultivating the Mind. It's an outline of basic Zen practices. By the way, throughout this text, the word Zen does not appear, but rather the Korean equivalent of son, S-O-N. But I'm just substituting Zen. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that word correctly, son. Secrets on Cultivating the Mind is an outline of basic Zen practices written by Chinul between 1203 and 1205, just a few years before he died, to instruct the throngs coming to the newly completed Susonsa. It was lost in Korea after the destruction wrought by the Mongol invasions, 2 decades after Chinul's death, but it was preserved in the Northern Ming edition of the Tripitaka, produced in the early 15th century. It remains one of the most popular Zen texts in Korea today. So here now is Chinul himself, his writing. The triple world is blazing in defilement as if it were a house on fire. How can you bear to tarry here, means to stay here and complacently undergo such long suffering? If you wish to avoid wandering in samsara, there is no better way than to seek Buddhahood, enlightenment. If you want to become a Buddha, that is, if you want to become enlightened, understand that enlightenment is the mind. How can you search for the mind in the far distance? It is not outside the body. The physical body is a phantom, for it is subject to birth and death. The true mind is like space, for it neither ends nor changes. Therefore it is said, these 100 bones will crumble and return to fire and wind, but one thing is eternally numinous and covers heaven and earth. He kicks off this text with the most fundamental concern of anyone who is aroused the mind that seeks the way, to use Zen Master Dogen's phrase. If you wish to avoid wandering in samsara, there is no better way than to seek enlightenment. This idea of rebirth and the wheel of samsara is one that I think relatively few people in our culture can relate to. We've created a world here in the West, and the Asia is coming right up with us. We've created a world where the types of suffering that were so present in ancient times are not so much anymore. Yes, sickness, old age, and death, but how many people are exposed to these things the way they were in tribal societies throughout most of human history? There's plenty of suffering, for sure, in the West, but it doesn't seem to get under the skin of most people in such a way that they really consciously want to free themselves from this round of existence, this round of suffering. It isn't articulated that way in the minds of most people. But we don't have to, really. We don't have to frame it in terms of this lifetimes and lifetimes of incalculable suffering. We just have to want to free ourselves now from this unnecessary suffering and others, of course. This is raising the thought of enlightenment, bodhicitta, the aspiration to enlightenment, in which we aspire to come to awakening for the sake of all sentient beings, not just our own comfort and sense of privilege or ease, but for the sake of all beings to come to this enlightenment. Chinyo continues, it is tragic. People have been deluded for so long. They do not recognize that their own minds are the true Buddhas. It's true, the true enlightenment itself. They do not recognize that their own natures are the true Dharma. They want to search for the Dharma, yet they still look far away for holy ones. They want to search for enlightenment, yet they will not observe their own minds. If they aspire to the path of enlightenment while obstinately holding to their feeling that enlightenment is outside the mind, or the Dharma is outside the nature, then even though they pass through kalpas as numerous as dust motes, burning their bodies, charring their arms, crushing their bones and exposing their marrow, or else write sutras with their own blood, never lying down to sleep, eating only one offering a day at the hour of the hare, which is 5 to 7 a.m., or even studying through the entire Tripitaka and cultivating all sorts of ascetic practices, it is like trying to make rice by boiling sand. It will only add to their tribulation. That's one long sentence. Let's break it down here. Of course, he's talking about people who imagine that this enlightened nature is something out there that we have to get to. It's a point B that we have to reach from this point A. It's some point in the future that we have to arrive at, and this is a delusion, the fundamental delusion that it's somewhere out there, some other time or place. And then he talks about these ascetic practices. At least some of these things were done by some monks, burning their bodies, charring their arms, I don't know, about crushing their bones and exposing their marrow. But writing sutras with their own blood, this is something you read about in the texts. Never lying down to sleep, eating only one meal a day. Studying the entire Tripitaka. Tripitaka means the three baskets, and these are the three. This is the whole Buddhist canon. It's the sutras, which are mostly texts that are attributed to the Buddha, but not exclusively. There's also the Platform Sutra, the Vimalakirti Sutra, and others. So there are sutras, there are shastras, which are commentaries on the sutras, and there are and the shastras are vast, just tens of thousands of volumes that include all manner of texts on Buddhist philosophy and psychology. And then there's the Vinaya, which are the monastic rules and regulations. These are the three traditional baskets, so-called. So even studying, he says, even studying through all that, and then cultivating all these ascetic practices, it is like trying to make rice by boiling sand. And he says, if they would only understand their own minds, then without searching, approaches to Dharma as numerous as the sands of the Ganges and uncountable sublime meanings would all be understood. Just look. Look. If we would just look at things as they are, see things as they are, there'd be no need to read about this mind, this reality, this enlightenment. No need to memorize. He goes on, as the world-honored one said, I see that all sentient beings everywhere are endowed with the Tathagata's wisdom and virtue. He also said, all the illusory guises in which sentient beings appear take shape in the sublime mind of the Tathagata's complete enlightenment. Tathagata, of course, is referring to the Buddha. The Enlightened One. Chinul, consequently, you should know that outside this mind there is no enlightenment which can be attained. All the Enlightened Ones of the past were merely those who understood their minds. All the sages of the present are likewise merely persons who have cultivated their minds. All future meditators should rely on this Dharma as well. I hope that you who cultivate the path will never search outside. The nature of the mind is unstained. It is originally whole and complete in itself. So he's urging us to stop thinking about enlightenment as something to be attained, but just bring our whole mind to bear on this moment, this practice that we're doing. There's nothing wrong with, to say the least, there's nothing wrong with having this aspiration to enlightenment, this bodhicitta. But once we have it, we don't need to chew on it. We don't need to sit and dwell on this enlightenment, the thought of enlightenment as a goal, but just to pour ourselves completely into this simple practice that has served countless monks and nuns and lay people for centuries. The breath practice, koan practice, shikantaza. question. If you say that the Buddha nature exists in the body right now, then since it is in the body, it is not separate from us ordinary people. So why can we not see this Buddha nature now? Chino, it is in your body, but you do not see it. I think what he really would have said was, it is your body. It's not just in your body. That's another mistaken notion, that it's somewhere in us, like somewhere stored in our hara or something. It is our body, but you do not see it. Ultimately, what is that thing which during that throughout the day knows hunger and thirst, cold and heat, anger and joy? This physical body is a synthesis of four conditions: earth, water, fire, and air and wind. Since matter is passive and insentient, how can it see, hear, sense, and know? That which is able to see, hear, sense, and know is your Buddha nature. For this reason, Lin Chi said, the four great elements do not know how to expound Dharma or listen to Dharma. Empty space does not know how to expound Dharma or listen to Dharma. It is only that formless thing before your eyes, clear and bright of itself, which knows how to expound Dharma or listen to Dharma. And then Chinu, this formless thing is the Dharma seal of all the Buddhas. It is your original mind. Since this Buddha nature exists in your body right now, why do you vainly search for it outside? Question. You talked about seeing into one's nature, but when there is true seeing of one's nature, the person becomes an enlightened sage and should be able to perform magic and miracles. He would be different from other people. How is it then that among those who cultivate the mind nowadays, that is, cultivate always means practice, among those who practice nowadays, not one can display these spiritual powers and transformation bodies? So, his questioner is suggesting that once enlightened, you should be able to perform magic and miracles. Chinu, you should not utter absurdities lightly. To be unable to differentiate the perverse from the noble is to be deluded and confused. Nowadays, you people who are training on the path chat about truth with your mouth, but in your minds you only shrink from it and end up falling into the error of underestimating yourselves by thinking that you do not share in this Buddha nature. This is all that you are doubting. You train on the path, but do not know the proper sequence of practice. You talk about truth, but do not distinguish the root from the branches. This is called wrong view. It is not called practice. You are not only deceiving yourselves, you are deceiving others too. How can you not be on your guard against this? So he's coming down pretty hard on this guy who is concerned about magic and miracles. It's such a marginal, such a peripheral matter to true spiritual practice. So beside the point, magic and miracles. Whole point is seeing through this self, this illusory self, with all of its grasping and wanting and its greed, anger, and delusion. This is the task before us. Magic and miracles is nothing compared to that. We know, surely we know, that the people who do have psychic abilities, such as they might be, are by no means free of egoistic craving and attachment. It's a certain aptitude or faculty that they have, but what good does it do them when they're facing death, suffering loss, losing someone close to them? Oh, maybe they feel some consolation with whatever they may imagine to be the spirit passing on, but the job before us is to come to terms with life and death. That's something far more magnificent than toying with psychic powers or magic. Chino continues, "Now there are many approaches to the path, but essentially they are included in the twofold approach of sudden awakening and gradual practice." He uses the word cultivation, but I'm going to substitute practice. And we'll hear a lot about this, sudden awakening and gradual practice. Although sudden awakening, sudden practice has been advocated, this is the entrance for people of the highest faculties. What he's referring to when he says sudden, that is sudden awakening and sudden practice, is after awakening, practice is completed. There's nothing more to do, more or less. And he says that such people are rare. If you were to probe their pasts, you would see that their cultivation has been based for many lives on the insights gained in a previous awakening. Now, in this life, after gradual permeation, these people hear the Dharma and awaken. In one instant, their practice is brought to a sudden conclusion. I think of what we're told about the sixth patriarch. But if we try to explain this according to the facts, then sudden awakening, sudden practice, is also the result of an initial awakening and its subsequent cultivation. Consequently, this twofold approach of sudden awakening and gradual practice is the track followed by thousands of sages. Hence, of all the sages of old, there were none who did not first have an awakening, subsequently cultivate it, and finally, because of their cultivation, gain realization. Now, this is a very important sentence, because he distinguishes between awakening and realization. Let me reread it. Of all the sages of old, all of them first had an awakening and then subsequently cultivated it. That's practice after awakening. And finally, because of their ongoing practice, gained realization. Realization really means to make real our awakening. To make it real means to embody it, to live it. Not just to catch a glimpse of some other realm, but to then integrate that understanding, that awakening, into our daily life. That's realization. Realization is exceedingly rare. He goes on, "The so-called magic and miracles you mentioned manifest because of the gradual permeation of practice based on an initial awakening. It should not be said that they appear simultaneously with that awakening. And then he quotes one of the sutras. The noumenon is awakened to suddenly and is forged in accordance with this awakening. Phenomena cannot be removed suddenly. They are brought to an end step by step. So let's clarify this distinction between the noumenon and the phenomena. It's just a way of distinguishing two aspects of reality. Phenomena, we know. Everyone knows about phenomena. It's every conceivable thing. Physical things, physical objects, thoughts, feelings, emotions, states of mind, states of consciousness. These are phenomena. The world it's the whole world to most people, just phenomena. Noumenon is that which is beyond all phenomena. That thing, or no thing, that lies within all phenomena. It's beyond change. It's the eternal. Beyond time and space. It's utter spaciousness, absolute, perfect peace. We experience this noumenon in a samadhi state where we are no longer caught in thoughts. The mind falls silent. This is the other side. This is the dark side of the moon, this so-called noumenon that most people never see. You might say it's the inside of things. The transcendent. When he says phenomena cannot be removed suddenly, they are brought to an end step by step, he means our attachment to thoughts and habit patterns, our conditioning. We certainly don't have to bring an end to phenomena literally. We don't need to bring an end to the sound of the cicadas, the wind blowing, our heart beating. These are all phenomena. We don't need to bring them to an end. We just have to see that any attachment to any phenomena is what binds us to suffering. He says, for this reason, Kui Feng, the Chinese master, in a profound explanation of the meaning of initial awakening / subsequent cultivation, said, and this is a nifty simile here, metaphor that he uses, although we know that a frozen pond is entirely water, the sun's heat is necessary to melt it. Although we awaken to the fact that an ordinary person is Buddha, enlightened, the power of Dharma is necessary to make it permeate our cultivation, our practice. When that pond has melted, the water flows freely and can be used for irrigation and cleaning. When falsity is extinguished, the mind will be numinous and dynamic, and then its function of penetrating brightness will manifest. So again, first there is this initial awakening, which is usually quite tentative, it's quite faint. And then after that, we have to follow it up with endless practice. But practice after awakening is not the same as before. If it's a genuine awakening, then the practice becomes more natural, more often what we want to do. Because in having seen into our nature, then practice is a way to be in harmony with it. And who would not want to be in harmony with this enlightened nature? Question. You have said that this twofold approach of sudden awakening, gradual cultivation, is the track followed by thousands of sages. But if awakening is really sudden awakening, what need is there for gradual cultivation? And if cultivation means gradual cultivation, how can you speak of sudden awakening? Chinu, first let us take sudden awakening. When the ordinary person is deluded, he assumes that the four great elements are his body and the false thoughts are his mind. He does not know that his own nature is the true Dharma body. He does not know that his own numinous awareness is the true Buddha. He looks for enlightenment outside his mind. While he is thus wandering aimlessly, the entrance to the road might by chance be pointed out by a wise teacher. If in one thought he then follows back the light of his mind to its source and sees his own original nature, he will discover that the ground of this nature is innately free of defilement, and that he himself is originally endowed with the wisdom nature which is not a hair's breadth different from that of all the enlightened ones. Hence it is called sudden awakening. In other words, awakening to the nature of reality, of the nature of one's own self, is to awaken to the fact that we have always been enlightened. Everyone is equally endowed with this enlightened mind and always has been. Period. But then he says, now let us consider gradual cultivation after awakening. Although he has awakened to the fact that his original nature is no different from that of the Buddha's, the beginningless habit energies are extremely difficult to remove suddenly, and so he must continue to cultivate, practice, while relying on this awakening. Through this gradual permeation, this ongoing practice, his endeavors reach completion. He constantly nurtures the sacred embryo, and after a long time, he becomes a sage. Hence, it is called gradual cultivation. There's a footnote of this reference to he constantly nurtures the sacred embryo. And the footnote reads, sacred embryo refers to the practitioner during the three stages of worthiness. In Zen texts, the phrase constantly nurture the sacred embryo refers to subsequent practice after the initial understanding and awakening, during which the inchoate embryo of Buddhahood is nurtured until finally the fetus matures and is born into the family of the Buddhas at the initial level of the 10 bhumis. That means 10 levels of enlightenment. And then he goes on, Chinul says, this process can be compared to the development of a child. From the day of its birth, a baby is endowed with all the sense organs, just like everyone else, but its strength is not yet fully developed. It is only after many months and years that it will finally become an adult. That's a perfect analogy for Kensho. Kensho is to have the same essential insight as the Buddha. Essentially, it's the same. but it is vastly less developed and vastly less deep than the Buddha's. Question: through what means is it possible to trace back the radiance of one's sense faculties in one thought and awaken to the self nature? Chinu: the self nature is just your own mind. What other means do you need? If you ask for means to seek understanding, you are like a person who, because he does not see his own eyes, assumes that he has no eyes and decides to find some way to see. But since he does have eyes, how else is he supposed to see? If he realizes that in fact he has never lost his eyes, this is the same as seeing his eyes, and no longer would he waste his time trying to find a way to see. Your own numinous awareness is exactly the same. Since this awareness is your own mind, how else are you going to understand? Simply by knowing that there is no other way to understand, you are seeing the nature. So it's all right here with us. We have everything we need, fully functioning. It's called awareness. It's another translation of Buddha is awareness or enlightened awareness. That is our nature. It always has been our nature. Question: when the superior person hears Dharma, he understands easily. But average and inferior people have doubt and confusion. Could you describe some method, so that the deluded too can enter into enlightenment? Chinu: the path is not related to knowing or not knowing. You should get rid of the mind which clings to its delusion and looks forward to enlightenment, and listen to me. Since all dharmas, all things, all phenomena, are like dreams or phantoms, deluded thoughts are originally calm, and the sense spheres, seeing, hearing, so forth, are originally void, empty. At the point where all dharmas are void, the numinous awareness is not obscured. That is to say, this mind of void and calm, numinous awareness is your original face. It is also the Dharma seal transmitted without a break by all the Buddhas of the three time periods, the successive generations of patriarchs, and the wise teachers of this world. Well, the next section is goes on for a very long paragraph. So let's wrap it up for today. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.